I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime!
Woo! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, Mike Madison, here weekdays, 2 hours a day from 9 to 11 o'clock. Lots going on today. We're going to start out with one of my most regular segments. My longest running segment is Hump Day Health. I did that the very first Wednesday I came on, and now I've done about 250 health shows to try to convince people to take control of their health. It's also the segment I'm most proud of because I've had contact with listeners, and it's made a real difference to some people and their lives. So that's great. But then this one much more aggravating regular segment that comes up when it comes to government spending. We'll do that in a second. The Libertarian Party's got my quote of the day today. Libertarian Party, the enemy of Dennis Prager and Alex Jones now for some reason. But this is what they tweeted out. Libertarian Party tweeted out, the CDC is not interested in public health for the same reason Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are not interested in peace. They can't profit off of healthy, peaceful, free people. The CDC is not interested in public health for the same reason Raytheon and Lockheed Martin are not interested in peace. They can't profit off of healthy, peaceful, free people. That says it all right there. A little bit about the CDC later on in the show. Almost a humorous headline about the CDC. We'll get to that in a little while. And then a very sad story about a DJ. I think he's an Australian DJ. This is some heartbreaking stuff, what's going on in the world right now, health-wise. And this guy's letter is worth reading, so we'll get to that in a little while. On the economy, I am bound and determined to do economic stuff that may not be the sexy news stuff, because I believe, much like Henry Ford, if the people of the United States understood the banking system, our monetary system, there'd be a revolution by tomorrow morning. Right now, what I see is a bunch of people misguidedly following one party or politician or another because they do not understand the monetary system and how these people, all of the big names that you know, many of them you profess your love or your hatred of, all of these people are serving the same monetary system. And so I'm bound and determined to try to just inject a little bit of economics into this show. Well, a lot of economics into the show. Because I believe it's going to be very important going forward as we see some troubles to understand who to blame. And you're going to need to blame some of your favorites, too. It's amazing to me that the political system has got us into a situation where we believe that the people who caused the mess are the ones that are going to come save us from the mess. And this continues, I believe, largely because of economic illiteracy in the United States. There's been news over the last couple of weeks that the Fed has been doing dollar swaps with the Swiss National Bank. Now, don't fall asleep. Now, I've been paying attention to these headlines, but I'll be honest with you, I didn't quite understand exactly what's happening. I understand that the world is in need of dollars. There's a lot of dollar-denominated debt out there, and as interest rates go up, people around the world need more dollars to pay the interest on their dollar-denominated debt. But I didn't really fully understand what was going on with the dollar swaps with the Swiss National Bank. I watched about a 30-minute video on it to explain it to me with a whiteboard and captions. A guy named, I think it's the Rebel Capitalist, is the guy that put this piece out. And he does some very interesting stuff for economics nerds like myself to take complex things and and explain them to us. The bottom line is the banks are needing the Fed here in the U.S. to bail them out with dollars. The Federal Reserve right now is bailing out banks around the world. Originally, it was six banks in the first week. The second week, it was 15 banks. Now, usually these banks just borrow from each other. But right now we have a problem where the banks don't trust each other anymore. They don't know that borrowing money or loaning money to another bank, they're really not sure if that bank's going to be around to pay them back. Now, the last time that that happened was in March of 2020, March and, I believe, April. If you remember March and April of 2020, that was during COVID when we didn't know what was going to happen. We were shutting down the entire world economy. That was a very short-lived financial crisis. The Fed flooded us with money to get through it and created the inflation that we're living through today. But at the time before that, the last time that this happened, where banks were not trusting each other to loan each other money, was in 2007, starting in, I believe, December of 2007 into 2008. Does anybody remember what happened in 2008? That was the great financial crisis. So this is one of those signs. I'm seeing a lot of headlines where people are referring to cracks in the financial system around the world. We've seen Great Britain have a currency crisis over there. It's moderated a little bit. They started printing up more money. It's not a long-term fix, but it might have brought them back from the immediate brink, only to lead them up to a higher cliff later down the road. But here's the story that is one of the most regular segments I've done since I've been on the air. The federal government collected a record $4,896,119,000,000 in total taxes in fiscal 2022. Every time I do this story, and I don't believe there's been an exception in my 5.5 years here, every time I do this, our federal government has collected more money, a record amount of taxes. This is theft from the American people, put into the black hole of Washington, D.C., and yet it's still never enough. That was up $518 billion, or 11.8% from the previous record of $4.3 trillion. Now, there's some sick things about this report. As I say, this is getting a little monotonous. I do this all the time, but you have to understand that I've been here for 5.5 years. That means I've been doing this reporting during Republican presidents and Democrat presidents. Republican-controlled Senate and House and Democrat-controlled Senate and House. Yet this story remains the same throughout each one. Record amounts of tax revenue collected. Now, I want you to hear a little bit because, again, we're an economically illiterate country. When I tell you that income taxes should be zero, most people say, well, that's ridiculous. How would you fund the federal government, Mike? Well, of that almost $5 trillion that they collected, $2,632,145,000,000 was in individual income taxes. That leaves a whole big bucket of trillions of dollars still collected outside of individual income taxes. Hey, dummy, they can run the government without picking our pockets. This was also $1.4 trillion in social insurance and retirement taxes. $99 billion, just right about $100 billion in customs duties, $87 billion in excise taxes, $32 billion in estate and gift taxes. Now, what I think is really sick about that, think about that number for a moment, $32,550,000,000 collected in estate and gift taxes. What that means is you working hard during the course of your life, achieving some level of success, and then giving some money to your family to secure their financial future. The government took away $32,550,000,000 from Americans who just wanted to pass on the fruits of their labor onto future generations. And that $32,550,000,000 doesn't even account for what we've just handed over to Ukraine in the past 8 months. They took this away from American families. And many times these are businesses that are passed down. People are forced to sell their businesses to pay the taxes, the estate taxes on them, rather than hand a good functioning, healthy financial business off to their heirs. So the feds here, Republican and Democrat, the feds have collected $32,550,000,000 to destroy and hamper the wealth transfer from parents to children, and also in gift taxes. You're not allowed in this land of the free, the United States of America. I believe the number might be $14,000. Maybe they've indexed that for inflation, but I believe you can give somebody $14,000, but if you give somebody $15,000, the Fed's going to stick its nose in there and it's going to take some money from you. It's going to charge you taxes. You can't just be giving your money to somebody you know. Even though that money, you've already paid taxes on it, when you give that after-tax money to somebody else, they're going to tax it again. But in gift taxes, they're just taking that money plus a chunk more and just handing it off to Ukraine in just one of the many boondoggles of our federal government. Now, what is also very repetitive about these stories, while collecting a record $4.86896 trillion in total taxes, the federal government was also spending a total of $6,271,000,000, resulting in a fiscal 2022 deficit of almost $1.4 trillion. Now, here's what I want to call people's attention to as you line up behind your parties and your politicians that you love so much. That was the fourth straight year that the federal government has run an annual deficit of more than $1 trillion. In fact, when adjusted into constant September 2022 dollars, allowing for inflation, the federal deficit has exceeded $1 trillion in 8 of the last 14 years. So you're not voting your way out of this. That allows for years with Joe Biden, with Donald Trump, with Barack Obama, with Republican House and Senate, with Democrat House and Senate, and with split houses as well. So don't be thinking you're going to vote your way out of this. You need to start, if you want to, I want to see that red wave, but wouldn't it be great if we started holding them accountable to that at the same time? But we won't. We'll just bask in the victory and wait for them to come save us. I was looking at a chart. Let's see what this year is. Now, this is an old year. This is a couple of years old. But I was actually looking at the national budgets of different countries, and it is pretty stark. It's amazing to think that the United States obviously is number one. We have, in this experiment of limited, small, centralized government and freedom that was started in the late 1700s and has become the largest bureaucracy and most bloated federal government in the history of mankind, for some reason, we've allowed that. We have the largest government by leaps and bounds. It's pretty interesting when you look at these things. China has, what, four times the number of people we have? Yet China, a completely centrally controlled government, a communist government, spends half of what we spend. They've got four times the number of people, yet they're somehow spending half of what we spend. Germany, the formerly prosperous Germany, until they decided to be NATO's B-word, Germany was the most prosperous country in one of the most prosperous countries in the world, and certainly the leader of the EU. They spent about 20% of what we spent. Now, they don't have as many people as we do. But then you get down to these other countries, Japan, France, United Kingdom. But I was also interested to see that India spends, now India is another one of these. They've got about 1.1 billion people, I believe, in India. So about three times as many people as we have. And yet they spend 10%. 10%. Now, I got to tell you, I want to travel the world. I really love traveling, and I've been to a lot of foreign countries. India is not one I'm really too hip to go to. It looks like a real hellhole from a lot of the videos. No offense. I've heard people have had a fantastic time going to India. Their PR is much like Jackson's. Did anybody see the Deion Sanders piece on 60 Minutes? I watched that. Everybody is inspired by what's going on at Jackson State right now with Deion Sanders. And so I watched the 60 Minutes thing. They did a little bit of B-roll, you know, some of the background shots of Jackson as they talked about the water crisis and other things related to the time that Deion's here in Jackson. Did you see the real estate that they showed in Jackson on 60 Minutes? It was shotgun shacks on cinder blocks, as I recall. That was basically all they showed of any parts of Jackson. So I would imagine people in India could watch the news and go, well, you know, I'd really like to travel the world, but I don't want to go to Mississippi. So point taken, India. But anyway, it's just pretty fascinating to me that in this country of supposed to be limited, constitutionally constrained government, we spend double the amount that China, with four times the number of people, spends. It's centralized communist government, over 1.3 billion people in China, and they spend half of what we spend. I don't know if people realize that. Now you do. Be right back.
You know, the day destroys the night. Night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide. Break on through to the other side.
We're on the cusp of the midterm elections. I want to warn you about a weasel word I'm hearing out of Republican candidates out there, people on the Republican side of things. Now, let me be very clear. The Democrats are the worst spenders out there. I mean, particularly when it was bad enough when the Democrats wanted to spend a bunch of money, wanted to centrally control the welfare state here in the United States and trap tens of millions of people in abject poverty and dependence. But now the Democrats have got a taste for war, too. Now they're bloodthirsty neocon warmongers on the Democratic side, so you tack on the warfare state on top of the welfare state, so the Democrats are completely out of control. The Republicans have held the mantle of the warfare spending group for so long, and maybe they're turning around slightly on that. But I'm going to warn you about a weasel word I keep hearing in midterm elections, Republican politicians. It is we need a balanced budget amendment. Anytime you hear a Republican tell you that they are all for a balanced budget amendment, understand that means they're never going to get their spending under control. Because to add an amendment requires an incredible amount of work. You have to get the majority of states to agree to this. It's a tedious process that will never happen. And so when they say a balanced budget amendment, it sounds like they're really fiscally conservative and they really want to rein in out-of-control D.C. spending. You don't need an amendment. You know, if you and your wife are looking at the family finances and realizing, hey, we are spending too much money and incurring too much debt, this is not going to end well for us, we need to reverse course, you don't need to go to an attorney's office to have some kind of a document drawn up and a legal contract to curtail your spending. You just stop spending. You don't need anything formal to do it. You realize that you've got a problem and you just make a U-turn right then and there. That's it. We're selling some stuff. We're not putting anything else on credit until we get this under control. So when Republicans tell you they're all for a balanced budget amendment, just realize they're giving you this little, it's like a jackass with a carrot sticking off the front of it with a stick. It's always going to be out there. They're always going to be talking about it, but they know they'll never actually achieve it. So they're just telling you, well, there's nothing we can do until we get this amendment. And I don't believe it will ever happen. You're not going to get the political class to ever rein themselves in. And this is a sad story. You know, when I look at the spending, and one of the reasons I talk about economics is because it's hurting average American people. It is killing the middle class. Both parties, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and George W. Bush. Every single one of them have been single-handedly destroying the middle class. This is what the statistics are on wages here for Americans right now. Let's get down to this. More than 30% of all American workers made less than $20,000 last year. More than 41% of all American workers made less than $30,000 last year. More than 52% of all American workers made less than $40,000 per year, and more than 62% of all American workers made less than $50,000 last year. I remember, I can't remember, I might have been in junior high or something, and one of my best friend's brother had gotten a job for $30,000. And I knew it was more than his father made as a professor at Millsaps. And I remember we were talking about, I think he was going to get paid. He was a computer engineer. This was obviously quite some time ago, but I remember hearing he was going to make $35,000, and we just couldn't even dream. Oh, he is knocking the cover off the ball. The guy graduated from an elite university and was going into computer science. $35,000 a year. That was a lot of money back then. It's not anymore. And the thing is that the inflation from all of this government spending is what makes every year what used to be a good income worth less and less and less and less, no more so than in the past year, which is just a result of decades of policies, but particularly the last few years that really lit the inflation fuse. So they are leaving the vast majority of Americans behind, while the people at the very top are the beneficiaries of that massive $6 trillion budget we just talked about, record spending. And so it's just sick to me to think that people believe that they're going to vote themselves out of this, and then just all they got to do is go on November 8th, pull that lever, and sit back and let it fix itself. It hasn't worked for 100 years now. And I'm still hearing people say, I want to see a red wave, but that's the beginning. That's the beginning of the work. As long as Roger Wicker is making statements saying the only problem with the Ukraine aid is that it wasn't enough and he couldn't get it to him faster, you have more work to do than just pulling the lever for another person with an R behind their name. I wanted to talk a little bit. I saw a home listing in Ridgeland that was pretty fascinating to me. I actually did a little bit of a search on real estate. I'm not thinking about buying right now. I'm waiting till there's blood in the streets, and then I hope I can pull the trigger on some real estate. I'm out of the market right now, but this listing in Ridgeland was very interesting. Very beautiful home. I'll tell you about the price action on this listing over just the past few years. I'll be right back.
I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYEB. So Great Britain has a new prime minister from the conservative side. That should fix the world, right? He's a Goldman Sachs guy. You got to hand it to Goldman Sachs, I got to tell you. They know how to put people in power. Matt Taibbi did a great piece on them years and years ago. I think this was after the financial crisis, where he called them the great vampire squid, just sucking the lifeblood out of planet Earth. Another Goldman Sachs guy in office. It was my first uh-oh moment with Donald Trump when there were about a dozen Goldman Sachs guys brought into his administration. I went, that wasn't what I was expecting. I was so naive back then. So naive. But anyway, I wanted to talk a little bit. As I said, I was looking at some real estate just out of curiosity. We're going to take a look at interest rates. And I'm going to tell you what the calculation is on as interest rates go up. I've been chronicling the 10-year bond here on the show. I told you the market would be in some trouble if it got over 3%. It's currently around 4.2%, and I believe it got up to 4.3%. So the bond market interest rates are going up, up, up. But I was looking at real estate, and I ran across this home in Ridgeland. Very pretty home. Very, very nice-looking house. I'm not going to get into where it is or what listing it is. It's none of my business. I don't want to be floating anybody's personal business out there. But it was just interesting to look. I was on Zillow. This house had a price cut, so I was looking to see if people were coming down on home prices now. And I'll explain to you why, even if they aren't now, it's inevitable that they will. This house was down. There'd been a price cut on the 4th of October of $25,000. So this house is now listed at $925,000. I guess it was $950,000. They've decided to come down $25,000 on this house. I was looking at the price action of this house. I was just curious, you know, when was this house built? What this house apparently was built in 2016. The listing price at that time Listing price on this house at that time, $549,900. That's the first listing that we see here. So in 2016, this is February of 2016, this house was $549,900. It is now listing for $925,000. They've cut $25,000 off the price. And it was interesting, too, there's even a chart of what their Zillow estimate was, and it was basically that this house was worth somewhere closer to $800,000 in 2016, at the end of 2016, as they were continuing to suppress interest rates, and then they started raising interest rates just a little bit, and it bottomed out at $400,000 for about 2 years while the Fed was raising some interest rates. Then the Fed went the other way, started lowering interest rates again, back down to zero at the urging of Donald Trump. And all of a sudden, the housing price popped up again, where it got up close to $1 million. And now it has come back down to $950,000. The Federal Reserve, they control everything. You are sitting on a house right now, just waiting to see what the Fed does. The Federal Reserve, something that nobody ever wants to talk about. It's never questioned in the halls of Congress, save just a few good Congress critters. Yet they are making huge determinations about your financial future each and every day. So this house is essentially almost doubled in price over 6 years. I don't know exactly what we're going to see in the housing market. I was surprised in looking at these listings. I was not seeing bigger drawdowns in prices. I think home sellers are really kind of just waiting for things to calm down a little bit. They know the market's softer than it was 6 months ago when it was on fire. And so maybe they're waiting. They're figuring that this will work itself out. Now, I'm not exactly sure what happens with home prices. If we have hyperinflation of 20% plus, which I believe is a real reality as soon as the Federal Reserve starts reducing interest rates again, which I believe they will ultimately do. But I don't know exactly what that does to home prices. Inflations like that would probably be stoked by them lowering interest rates back down again. But as inflation eats away at people's monthly income, they can't afford as much house. So interest rates may go down again if the Fed tries to force them down. I don't know if they'll be successful, but they'll certainly try. If they try to force them down, then interest rates could go down again. But when people are struggling, when they force interest rates back down again, it's going to stoke even more inflation, which means that every dollar that you have outside of a mortgage payment is less valuable. So people's budgets are going to be stretched. They may not be able to afford, if they can afford a $2,000 a month house payment. If inflation spikes, they really may be able to only to afford a $1,700 mortgage payment. And there's a calculation, the 30-year fixed rate right now. Oh, I also noticed on Zillow, I looked at houses under $250,000. That used to be a big chunk of houses in Ridgeland. Now there were four houses listed. Four. Now that's just Zillow. I think I looked at Realtor.com as well. There might have been eight or nine houses. There was some land under $250,000, but not many houses. $250,000 used to buy you a lot of house in Ridgeland. I believe I bought my first house in Ridgeland for $180,000 in a nice neighborhood, and my goal was to move one neighborhood over. Ultimately, we moved to Madison because the schools were better there, in our thinking anyway. But my goal was originally to move to the neighborhood adjoining that was slightly upscale from that, and it was $250,000 would have gotten this into a very nice house in this one subdivision. Now, $250,000 and below, there were only four houses on Zillow for that amount. 30-year fixed interest rate right now, according to Bankrate.com, 7.2%. That's about double what it was at the beginning of the year. A 15-year fixed was 6.43%. And interestingly, a 10-year fixed was 6.59%. You get a better rate on a 15-year fixed than you do on a 10-year fixed. That shouldn't be normal, but it is in today's world. But there's a calculation that's been done. Every 1% rise in interest rates, how does that affect the value of a home? And we know that Americans, and I'm sure people worldwide, but we base everything on a payment. We don't really look at the value of anything. This is why car loans have gone from 3 years now to 8 years, 9 years. I think I'm hearing about 10-year car loans. In many cases, you're going to actually have a loan that's longer probably than the life cycle of the vehicle itself because they want to stretch it out so that the payment can be lowered. And so we always go by what we can afford in our monthly budget, not what we can afford as far as purchasing price of a house. So for every 1% rise in interest rates, you can afford, if you're using the same payment, if you are budgeted for, say, an $1,800 a month mortgage payment, that's what you qualify for. It's just an example. For every 1% rise in interest rates, you can afford 10 to 11% less in a home purchase price. So to go from 3.5% up to 7%, a doubling during the course of this year, that's 3.5 percentage points higher in mortgage rates, or a theoretical 35% reduction in what you can afford as far as a house. So a $300,000 house at the beginning of this year that you would have qualified for with your, let's just say, $1,800 a month payment, if you want to keep that same mortgage payment now at 7.2%, over 7%, it becomes about a $200,000 house. Does that make sense to everybody? For every 1% rise in interest rates, home values, in order to maintain the payment, need to come down by about 10%. Now, this calculation is confounded by a few conditions that could exist to keep these house values from dramatically decreasing. And one is what I just mentioned. There's very limited supply of certain levels of homes in Ridgeland. There were only four houses under $250,000. So not a lot of people will be able to afford to sell their homes going forward because they're going to be underwater. So they may stay put, and that'll reduce the amount of inventory on the market. Builders will also have to slow down. So that also reduces inventory. So when people have to buy a house, they have fewer to choose from, and that short supply may keep home values up just a little bit. But this is where we are in the real estate market cycle right now. What I think we're in right now is it's kind of like what we see at the beginning of a stock market bear market. People don't sell when the market goes down a little bit. They always assume that it's going to pop right back up. This happened during the financial crisis. Oh, it was a temporary lull. You've got CNBC telling you this is a dip. Buy the dip. And people don't actually freak out until the market has completely crashed, as it did after that. I think a lot of home buyers are going, oh, this is just a little temporary thing here. We'll just keep the house off the market for a few more months, and we'll put it back on in 3 to 6 months and make our move then. So they're not dropping their prices yet. They're not ready to deal with the reality of the fact that they may be in an asset that is rapidly declining in value. But we will see. We'll see. It's going to be very interesting. But the housing market is not reflecting the fact that we have had a doubling in interest rates over the past, 10 months? 9 to 10 months. I talked a little bit about the fact that they've collected all this record money from the American people. You want to keep housing prices up? Get taxes off of your back. Can you even imagine? You know, and the other calculation in homes right now that's actually hurting is inflation itself. It now costs more money to fix a home. The raw materials are more expensive. The labor's more expensive. Everything about owning a house is getting more expensive. Particularly the insurance rates on houses are going to go up to reflect the higher cost in repairing a home that might be damaged if you're insured for that damage. Insurance companies are having to spend more money. I think Allstate just had a big miss on their earnings, and they realize they're going to have to start raising insurance rates. Now, I'm not picking on Allstate. This is going to be all insurance companies because the inflation affects what they have to lay out if they have an insured damage. We just saw this hurricane go through Florida. The damage was not what they thought it was originally going to be, but I would imagine that the cost to insurance companies over a hurricane of the same magnitude that might have happened 2 years ago is dramatically higher. They're going to pass these on to you in rates. So it's not only the mortgage rate that's going up, it's also the cost to own the home. And again, this is as inflation eats away at the parts of your income that you're not dedicating to housing as well. So this is feels to be kind of perfect stormy-ish to me. So we'll see going forward exactly what happens there. But I'll tell you a little bit about what they're doing with all this fresh cash they're getting in Washington, D.C. They got plans for it. Don't worry. They'll find a way to spend it. You may guess. You may guess where another giant chunk of it's about to go. Be right back. Now, I would say my last segment or two, if you're trying to sell a house right now, not great news for you. I apologize. I had one house, five closings fell through. One of those things where you don't want to be the exception. I remember our realtor going, wow, I've never seen this before. And I don't think we ever kept any of the earnest money. Well, the biggest racket in the world was this earnest money. It just was always snatched away on some technicality. I think I wasn't smart enough to have fought for it harder, but the house was on the market. It kept selling, but it ended up being on the market for like 7 or 8 months. We'd already moved out and gotten something else. Another lesson learned. Get a couple of days in that house after the sale from the buyer. Don't vacate. Find yourself something new if you don't want to stretch yourself with two mortgages, because that's what we did. But anyway, but if you're buying a house, if you're considering buying a house and you can have a little bit of patience, now, this may come across as sexist, but I know a lot of times the wives, when they get their mind up, they're ready to move. That's a tough force. Guys get excited about a new home too. We spent our entire youth setting up clubhouses. I remember doing that over and over again. I used to love to reorganize my room once or twice a year, move the bed to a different angle, fresh start in the bedroom. I mean, guys have kind of the same proclivity, but a wife who's ready to move up in house, boy, that's an unstoppable force in many cases. But if you can wait, we have seen a bubble in real estate. I don't know if prices will come down 20%, 30%, 50%. I don't know. Jackson was not very affected in 2008, but this was different. The housing boom in the Jackson metro area was real. People were selling their houses in hours for above asking price. That's not normal. And so we definitely have some level of a bubble here. I think the pain will be a little bit more here. So if people are forced to sell, you may find some good deals out there. Personally, I want my next house. I want to buy my next house at 17.5% interest. And I'll get a $250,000 house for about $125,000, and then I'll refinance in a few years and end up saving myself hundreds of thousands of dollars. There are always ways within these crises, there are ways to benefit. But I started this out by explaining to you that the feds are flushing cash, record high. They have stolen about $5 trillion from the American people, put it into their little crony coffers, so they can deal out some favors. And, of course, one of the big favors that one of the biggest money laundering operations going on right now is Ukraine. So this story comes out amid talk. It may be harder to push Ukraine aid through a Republican-controlled House if they win the majority in the midterms. Lawmakers from both parties are considering passing a new massive piece of legislation before the newly elected members are sworn in this January. Now, I did hear Kevin McCarthy say he was not for a blank check to Ukraine, but make no mistake, he certainly didn't say we don't need to be sending money halfway around the world for a border skirmish that does not involve national security here. He didn't say those words. He just says blank check. Those are the weasel words of the Republican leadership. Again, Roger Wicker's biggest regret on the first big Ukraine bill was not that we were spending money we didn't have and mortgaging our children's future to give money to a country halfway around the world that had provoked Russia in the first place. No, that wasn't his regret. His regret was we didn't give him enough and it didn't come fast enough. That was Roger Wicker's lamenting on the bill. NBC News reported Thursday that the bipartisan idea under consideration would be to pass a bill for Ukraine aid that could cover an entire year during the lame duck period. The bill is expected to be worth roughly $50 billion, which would bring total U.S. spending on the war to over $115 billion. That is almost double Russia's entire national defense budget. Now, I would imagine their budget's up right now, spending money on the military operations that are going on in Ukraine. But in the lead up to this conflict, Russia was spending about $60 billion a year on their defense. The United States, $800 billion. And now we have put in about double Russia's normal defense budget just from us. And other countries have been contributing, but nobody is laundering money through Ukraine more than the U.S. Congress, and particularly the Democrats. But this is a bipartisan bill, and I would imagine that your Mississippi legislators up in Washington, D.C. are part of this bipartisan support for Ukraine. They steal money from you. They send it halfway around the world to a conflict that we created in the first place. It's quite a little scam going on. I don't think any of our people outside of Michael Guest are up for re-election, but when the senators come up, remember that.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I want to let everybody know this Friday... late Friday afternoon, Stonington Farm is going to be delivering meat to the Jackson area. Now, this is something I've been trying to help them do, which is open up the Jackson market. Their farm is down in Perkiston, Mississippi. This is grass-fed, Mississippi-born, raised, and processed beef from a local farmer, and it's grass-fed the whole way. No antibiotics, no hormones. They are feeding cows the way nature intended, and it gives you a more nutritional product at the same price or less than your grocery store. And because they're making these deliveries, now we've started percolating some good business up for here for them in Jackson. You don't have to order a half cow anymore to get delivery up here. When they come to deliver some of their big orders, they're going to be taking smaller orders as well. So check out stoningtonfarm.com. And you can place a small order with them if you want to. Get a few of their ribeyes. Get some of their T-bones. Their ground beef is fantastic, and I believe they're running a special. It's $5.99 a pound as opposed to $6.99 a pound. Now, I don't know what the regular beef at the ground beef at the supermarket costs anymore. Not because I'm an elite and somebody does my shopping for me, but I've not bought the Big Food Operations ground beef in a long time, because I don't think it's healthy. So I bought organic beef there, and it certainly is more than $5.99 a pound. But this is good. It's better nutrition. And meat is good for you. A whole lot of things. I'm currently doing the carnivore diet. It's all I'm eating these days. I feel great. But if you want to improve your health, protect your pocketbook, and support a local, small, Mississippi grass-fed farm, this is your opportunity to do it without having to buy a whole cow. Check out stoningtonfarm.com. You can see everything that they offer, and then you've got a phone number. You are going to call the farmer yourself, talk to them. They're going to find out kind of what you want, what you need, maybe make some suggestions, and you are going to work with a local farm. This is the way food needs to be delivered. You're actually going to meet the farmer and pick up from them. So that's stoningtonfarm.com. Please check them out and support this great family farm with their great, nutritious, grass-fed beef. I get some content just from the CBS news breaks, and sometimes from the commercials during the CBS news breaks. Those are not our commercials. Those are national. It's how they get paid to do the news breaks. Now, we're not big fans of CBS, and that's no knock against this particular advertiser, but I just heard a term I don't think I've ever really mentioned here before, but just to show you kind of how the American system is really kind of rigged. There was a commercial on there about some oil and gas investments that you could make, but you have to be an accredited investor. Have you ever heard this term? An accredited investor. And what you'll hear on these commercials, I'm sure they'll run that commercial again during the CBS news break, so if you hear it, just pay attention to it. It's all about high-yielding investments, and you can write 100% of your investment off of your taxes. I think that's what the guy just said on the commercial. But you have to be an accredited investor. What is an accredited investor, you might ask? Well, you have to make, I believe, I pulled this up now. I knew it when I was a financial advisor, but I wasn't sure if any of the benchmarks had changed. You need to make over $200,000 a year and have a net worth exceeding $1 million. So you see, there, that's kind of where you start to get escape velocity in our system. Because if you reach these milestones, if you've already got a lot of money, you get access to anyone, more money. Now, the SEC, the financial regulators, what they will say is that some of these things are risky, and they are. But many people who invested in WorldCom stock understand there's risk in any investment, including your house right now. But the SEC and the financial regulators kind of wall this stuff off because they love you. And they just don't think that you're smart enough. If you're not rich, they don't think you're smart enough to understand the risk of such an investment that has such great potential and tax benefits, so you don't get access to it. They don't let you do it. You're not accredited. And so this is just one of those little words I thought I'd point out. As a formerly disgruntled financial advisor, this was one of the scams I saw where I could approach my high net worth clients with some pretty amazing opportunities, particularly when it came to tax savings and investment. And a lot of these things, the yield and the return on them was great. Oh, the risk might have been, because it's not, they're not as heavily regulated as WorldCom stock was. How'd that work out for everybody? And so there's some levels of risk, and you do have to pay attention to these things. Don't think you're going to get rich quick. But just the fact that they lock the vast majority of Americans out of some of the best investment opportunities because you're not, air quotes here in the studio, accredited. You're too dumb, too simple to understand the complexities of these very profitable investment opportunities. So just know, the fix is in. But, you know, I guess there's your goal right there. Earn $200,000, sock away, make sure you're worth $1 million, and the world starts to open up to you. You start to get on the other side of the ledger, and then you can make your way in the world. You know, I was talking earlier about how the middle class is shrinking, and I think the right gets one thing a little wrong these days. You know, I remember I used to talk to my father about organic food, and he really poo-pooed the whole idea. He knew I was spending a little bit more money on the food I was buying my family, and he thought it was kind of silly. He said, I didn't eat organic food when I was growing up. I think you're just throwing money away. And what I explained to him is, you don't understand, Dad. The food's different now than it was when you were a kid, when you were a young adult. He was born in 1930. I said, back when you were growing up, basically most things were organic. Most things were locally grown. They weren't genetically modified, all these other things. Yeah, didn't really work with him. He didn't really care. But you know, a big thing of the right, and it's to be applauded to a certain degree, this idea that, well, if you're not making enough money, I read all those statistics on how many Americans make what kind of money, you just need to work harder. And we're very, very judgmental of younger generations because of their cries for socialism and a hand up from the government. I'm critical of those things, too. They're massively wrongheaded, but people need to understand that this financial system, our monetary system, facilitated by both political parties, has just really destroyed the opportunity of so many people. You know, my father was, he had one job his whole life. He went into the Navy, was an aircraft mechanic on the USS Bahama Shard, and then he went to go work for Delta Airlines, where he was for 35 years and sailed out into a pretty early retirement after my sister passed away and he inherited a 3-year-old child. So he retired from Delta, full pension, full insurance, plus his Social Security a few years later. But those opportunities are few and far between right now. When you add in inflation and the way that eats away at people's earnings, what regulatory things have done to businesses in this country, made it harder for them to hire. They can't pay as much as they normally will because there's so much of a regulatory structure. I mean, the system has just destroyed the earning capability of a lot of Americans. And the most people that I know who are really judgy about people at the lower income levels, they just need to work harder like I did. You know, almost to a person, those people had some pretty big advantages. I talked to a lot of people whose Diddy started a business. Nothing wrong with that. I'd love to have a business I could pass on to my children and give them some security. I applaud that. That's why I hate estate taxes so much. But a lot of people who, they don't really want to examine some of the real advantages they had. When people trying to pull themselves up from their bootstrap, the government puts so many hurdles in your way at this point. People succeed in spite of the government, regulations, inflation. Over the past several generations, they have thrown more and more hurdles in people's way and made it more difficult. So if you did succeed, God love you. And there's lots of people that worked hard, came from nothing. My father was a very conservative man. He was born to a single mom in Moorhead, Mississippi, and ended up being firmly entrenched in the middle class and giving me a great quality of life. We weren't wealthy, but it was all because my father and my mother were just conservative people that just provided for their family. So the right has got that right to a degree. It's certainly better than sitting around waiting for the government to come save you, which is what the Democrats have decided to do. I don't know if they've noticed. This ain't working out so well. But we really have stacked the deck against a lot of people here. If you succeeded and made your way in the world 30, 40 years ago because you worked hard, well, God love you. Good for you. A lot of people did that. There's no doubt about it. But you have to understand, too, much like my father doesn't understand that the food had changed, you have to understand the economy has changed, too. And there are more and more hurdles for people to actually make their way. We don't see a whole lot of people, unless they go work for the government, that work their entire career for one company. And even if they do, there's no pension plan. There's no lifetime insurance benefits like my father had with Delta after his 35 years there. They have made the American dream farther and farther out of reach for more people. You know, there was a time in this country, not that long ago, really, many people listening to me probably remember these times, where you could get out of high school with a high school degree and go to work at managing a gas station. I mean, or pumping gas even. And you could have a family. You could buy a house. It is only recently, really, where people with only a high school degree are just, it's almost impossible. They can go into a trade. Matter of fact, a lot of the people who just have high school degrees that go into a trade end up doing fantastic because the trades have been so looked down upon in this quest for everybody needs to go to college, which is ridiculous. But it is the inflation in the monetary system that has taken the American dream and put it further and further out of reach, has left out massive sectors of our country where just one manufacturing job was enough to support a family of four along with some vacations and savings. That's not the case anymore. And that's because of the Death Star, the Federal Reserve, and our U.S. federal government. So just think about that. When you look at people who are maybe struggling a little bit, it's not always for lack of effort. Oh, there's definitely those stories, and we've seen some bizarre things happening in the labor market right now where people do not want to work. My sympathy is not with them. It's with the people who are trying and trying and losing ground to things like inflation, to businesses that can't pay what they'd like to pay because of the regulations on them, the taxes everybody is stripped of at every level. I've done my tax spiel before, where every transaction is taxed. Your company makes $100, they're taxed on that. They give you the $90 left over, you're taxed on that. You take the $80 that's left over from that and you hire a landscaper, he's taxed on that. He takes the money he has left to hire one of his workers, they're taxed on that. I mean, they take a bite at the apple every single time this goes around. And the tax structure also is keeping people down. So I just say, understand if you're an older person, if you're a boomer and you're judging a whole lot of people, understand the system has changed much like the food system has changed. Things are not as easy as they used to be. Speaking of massive government failures, interesting headline out of the CDC this past weekend, wasn't there? Be right back.
Through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee-ho.
I just had somebody call me during the break. I really appreciate them calling me because they wanted to know how to spell Stonington Farm. And I guess I just assume, you know, it's one of those things. Well, I know how to spell it. Certainly everybody else does, but that is a different name, isn't it? It's Stonington, S-T-O-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N, Stonington Farm, and the farm is singular. This is just one family farm. I think I've called them farms in the past. I love the fact they corrected me and said, look, we want people to understand we're not some big operation. We're a family farm. So it's Stonington Farm, StonningtonFarm.com, Stonington Farm. I'm good at spelling things on the fly. One of the things I used to do with my kids was when I would talk to them, I wouldn't use the words. I would spell out entire sentences. It used to drive them nuts, but I ended up with some pretty smart kids. And I think it made me better, too, when you have to actually do your sentences and spelling. I was about to attempt one right here, but I'm scared I'd flub it. But I used to be pretty good at it. Speaking of massive government failures, this was almost funny, almost. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who confidently lied last year when she proclaimed, quote, vaccinated people do not carry the virus and do not get sick, unquote. She's come down with COVID-19 one month after receiving the latest bivalent Omicron-tuned booster. 1 month. Now, I was trying to give any benefit of the doubt I could to this thing. My concern was always the long-term safety studies when it was first announced. And then it was that we started seeing that people were actually injured getting this thing, albeit reportedly a small number of people that got really, really badly injured. But I tried to give these things credit and said, it looks like at one point we thought you might get 2 to 3 months worth of protection. That was about all it was going to be. As the data was coming in, that looked like the best case scenario. Dr. the lying Walensky has now shown us that these new latest bivalent Omicron-tuned boosters are not good for even 6 weeks, as she has tested positive for COVID now. A great new supercut is out about this. We cannot ever forget. We can never forget, because I'm going to read you a letter next segment. I am going to read you a heartbreaking letter from somebody who trusted their government and their health authorities. So we can never forget exactly what was done to us. This is a great supercut that's making the rounds now, and I think it's appropriate to play it in light of CDC director, the lying Walensky, coming down with COVID less than a month after getting the latest booster.
Stops with every vaccinated person. A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus. The virus does not infect them. The virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. You cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this.
Essentially, vaccines block you from getting and giving the virus.
Wrong. Vaccinated people are at a very, very low risk of getting COVID-19.
Wrong.
Therefore, if you've been fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask.
When people are vaccinated, they can feel safe that they are not going to get infected.
Wrong.
We have all the vaccines we need. We just need our people to take it. A, for their own protection, for the protection of their family, but also to break the chain of transmission. You want to be a dead end to the virus.
Wrong.
So when the virus gets to you, you stop it.
Wrong.
You don't allow it to use you as the stepping stone to the next person.
Wrong.
I think given the country as a whole, the fact that we have now about 50% of adults fully vaccinated and about 62% of adults having received at least one dose, as a nation, I feel fairly certain you're not going to see the kind of surges we've seen in the past.
If you're vaccinated, you're not going to be hospitalized.
Wrong.
You're not going to be in an ICU unit.
Wrong.
And you're not going to die.
Wrong.
You're okay. You're not going to get COVID if you
Wrong.
Have these vaccinations.
Yeah.
Wrong. Yeah, I've been kind of wondering. I'm going to start this clip again. I understand the liability shield, particularly by adding these shots to the childhood schedule. This secures the liability protection for Big Pharma. That was the reason the CDC voted last week to recommend adding these to the childhood schedule. It wasn't about health. It wasn't about COVID. It was about liability protection for Big Pharma. That's why they did it. We've played the Robert F. Kennedy clip many times explaining that to people. So we know the pharmaceutical companies are shielded from liability. We're waiting to see if the doctors and the pharmacists who have been inoculating people with this ineffective and for many people very dangerous shot, if they are inoculated from legal proceedings. But I got to wonder, is Rachel Maddow in any trouble for this?
Stops with every vaccinated person. A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus. The virus does not infect them. The virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this.
Essential.
So that's that. There's not a lot of we. You know, I've told you in all of the CDC presentations, whether it was the Mini Mingla, Anthony Fauci, any of them, they used a lot of weasel words. We believe, we hope, we predict, these kinds of things. There were no weasel words in what Rachel Maddow just told the hundreds of people who watched MSNBC that night. She told them, it ends with you. You're protected. You're a dead end for this virus. I just wonder how far up the chain or how far across the chain of people who talked people into getting these shots, the liability protection goes to. Of course, when you have a shot like this that is worthless, particularly for anybody under about 70 years old, unless you are horribly immunocompromised or with massive body weight issues, and even then, I don't know if it's worth anything, but at least you are rightfully a little concerned about COVID. Everybody else, you should have been living your lives normally since April 10th of 2020. But when these things are just a massive failure, have turned out to be dangerous, but you can still get a corrupt CDC to add these to the childhood schedule, if you're Big Pharma, what's your next move? Well, now we have our answer.
This morning, drug maker Pfizer says it will soon start charging for its COVID vaccine. The cost will be about $120 for the vaccine once the federal government stops paying for them. Huh. It's still not clear yet if or when that could happen. Pfizer says it expects people with private or government-provided health insurance will still pay nothing.
Yeah, you'll still pay nothing, but your insurer or our government now that has been paying $20 per dose of this dangerous, worthless shot will now be paying about $120. I don't think it's a coincidence that the CDC recommends this for the childhood schedule, and then they jack up the price. I think it might have been that day or the next day. Interesting timing, isn't it? Huh. I'll be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I know I'm probably preaching a lot to the choir when it comes to these shots, but there are new listeners to every radio show across the dial. You never know who you're going to catch. And I think certain things need to be brought to light. When it comes to this mRNA platform, one thing people need to understand, this is the beginning, not the end. They're already talking about using mRNA for cancer vaccines now. This apparently is a very profitable platform for them. And now that they think they've gotten some legitimacy to the people who still believe that this technology is safe and effective, they're going to be rolling more of these things out, and the hits keep on coming with them trying to add this thing to the childhood schedule. We can't stop talking about it. Now more than ever, parents are going to be forced with a big decision across this country. Hopefully Mississippi is in the clear with the law that luckily our legislature passed last year that said it will not be required to attend school. But you understand, across this country, there are states that will force this on parents. We're going to see, I mean, what we saw with homeschooling over the last couple of years may be nothing compared to what homeschooling is about to become, which ultimately may be a positive thing. It's just a shame so many children are going to be injured to make that happen. So we can't stop talking about this stuff, and particularly when, like I said, they keep ratcheting this up. It's not going away. They're not admitting their failure and saying, big swing and a miss, we apologize to everybody. No, they are doubling down and trying to get this in the arms of six-month-olds. And many parents do not know that there are problems with these shots. As hard as it is to believe to the choir that I'm preaching to, there are a lot of people out there that still do not know any of this information because they don't seek out anything other than the 6 o'clock news. I wanted to read this story about a DJ that has put out a message, and you'll kind of understand he is one of these people who did not seek any other information outside of mainstream sources. I will say this about a DJ. I was a rocker growing up. My sister, a DJ at WZZQ. For show and tell, I used to take a record player. Yeah, that's right. I'm that old. I used to take a record player into my elementary school, and I'd plop it down on the teacher's desk, and I would take some new rock song, and I would play it and just stand in front of the class like an idiot, bobbing my head with it. So I've always loved music, and I always just thought, you know, I remember as DJs were getting really popular, and they were making tons of money. I thought, a DJ? You just put records on, and, you know, what skill is there? Who cares who the DJ is? Then I was running a nightclub and had the occasion to hire some DJs. Man, some of these guys are geniuses. It's not an easy gig to blend different songs together, even the scratching stuff to get it right. I mean, I stood up in the DJ booth with some of the DJs that we hired, and I was pretty amazed at what they were able to do. It is a skill. So please do not deride our man who's about to speak to us here through his letter as just some stupid DJs. These guys are very creative people. They may use other people's music, but the way they blend it and the way they turn it into something that is moves a crowd is really quite something to behold if you've never done it. Some of these guys are probably worth their money. Here's his story. This is a heartbreaker. My name is Tyson Illingworth, and I am an award-winning international DJ, composer, songwriter, and sound designer. The music industry and my fans know me by my artist name, Tidy. That's T-Y-D-I. I assume he pronounces it Tidy. And I have been a musician-composer for 20 years, and I'm only 35. Never in my wildest dreams, or more precisely my nightmares, did I expect that I would find myself where I am today. Instead of touring and being interviewed for my latest show, track, or album, I am receiving daily media invitations to talk about my fight to regain my health after being injured and paralyzed by the Moderna vaccine. It is important to know that I am pro-evidence-based science and thought the vaccine was safe for me. I believe wholeheartedly in what I was that I was doing, quote, the right thing, unquote, by getting vaccinated. I had complete faith and trust in my country, Australia's, leadership and medical system. That is until I suffered a severe adverse reaction that left me helpless, paralyzed, and with no help from doctors or my government. Now, I want you to listen to the capture. The capture, what the medical system has done to people. And I'm not saying all of the people involved in this story are evil. They are captured. They are brainwashed. They are indoctrinated in medical schools to tell you that anything that the FDA or the CDC, or in this case, the equivalents in Australia, say is the gospel truth and cannot dare be questioned. I think doctors are waking up more and more to that. Of course, they're still not speaking out. I was listening to something the other day, and one thing people pointed out to me that I probably underestimate is the fact that a lot of these doctors who are awake now to this huge scam around COVID and these shots, not only are they scared of losing their hundreds of thousands of dollars of annual compensation, that's kind of sick. I don't know what the level is of my income that would force me to voluntarily harm a child. I don't think that number exists, but I've never been tested with. It certainly wouldn't be in the hundreds of thousands. I'll happily make $60,000 a year and not harm children rather than $350,000 a year harming children. But someone brought up also that many of these doctors, not only would they lose that income, but they're also saddled with a quarter to a half a million dollars in student loans, and they realize they will go completely belly up should they lose their position. It's still cowardly to not speak out against this thing because it is truly harming people, as we're going to continue with this letter with this DJ. But it is understandable that they are behind the eight ball financially, as much as we like to think doctors are all free as a bird with their high incomes. Many of them are actually paycheck to paycheck for maybe 20 years of their practice because they're trying to pay off $500,000 of ridiculous student loans. I go on with this letter from this DJ. I want you to check this out. Before the pandemic hit, I lived in California for 10 years, and like many others in 2021, I soon found my life came to a standstill, and I had to move back to Australia. This is because California went just buck crazy around COVID with that ridiculous Governor Newsom that they have over there. But anyway, he goes on to say, in October that same year, I received my first vaccination. Within days, I started to feel severe and unbearable shooting pain and paralysis in my hands and feet. I contacted a globally well-respected spinal surgeon for advice, and his reply scared me like nothing before. Quote, this can only be evidence of a catastrophic neurological failure, unquote. Shortly afterward, I was rushed to the hospital where I stayed for 2 weeks. I was in disbelief and became depressed because I couldn't believe the vaccine could do this to me, especially when we were all told it was safe and effective, and if there was a reaction, it would be minor. If this was not enough, whilst in hospital, I was under the care of a highly rude and dismissive neurologist who repeatedly told me, quote, there is no way this is the vaccine, unquote. Over time, my condition worsened. I asked the doctor at the hospital if I would ever walk properly again, and they would not give me an answer because they were perplexed too. It was a surreal and lonely experience learning how to walk again. I had no one to turn to who could understand me and give me answers. Now, this is where this is a truly tragic story of just absolute condition of obedience to some degree. I don't know how to describe this. So we've just, the guy's taken one shot. He's spending weeks in the hospital and he's paralyzed. He's having to learn how to walk again. But that's not the end of the story. Before I was released from hospital, the neurologist strongly advised me to get a second vaccine and said, quote, if you don't get the second one, the first will be redundant, unquote. I acted on the neurologist's advice and ended up taking the second vaccine only a month after my first one. In hindsight, I cannot believe I listened to her, as I have always thought of myself as a critical thinker, and instead, I took advice from a doctor who had no regard for my personal situation. She refused to listen to me and has been disingenuous. She can see these injuries. And not even the slightest hesitation or increased caution. Even if within her own head she thought, there's no way there's this vaccine, would you try it again? Well, to this neurologist, of course you do, because that's what the medical establishment tells you to do. Back to the story. Shortly after the second shot, my injuries were further exacerbated and I was unable to move. My hands felt like they were on fire, and I struggled to get through the day. I was rushed to hospital once again, and I thought my life was over. There was no hope for me. Well, not just yet. In January of 2022, I ended up catching COVID-19. I woke up at around 3:50 a.m., gasping to breathe, fearing for my life. I called 000 and said, quote, if you don't get to me now, I will die. An ambulance arrived quickly, and I was rushed to the ER. From there, I was taken to a COVID ward where I would spend the next 2 weeks struggling to breathe, fighting fevers, and shaking and crawling to the bathroom with no help. Even though I often cried for help, I heard the nurses laughing and talking in the hallway. Hours would pass, and I was unable to take the pain anymore. I would hobble to the door to my room, open it, and was immediately met with a loud scream from nurses, quote, shut the blanking door. You are a biohazard, unquote. This is not the Australia I know, and it was heartbreaking to witness nurses and doctors treating vulnerable patients in this way. I was not alone. They abandoned everyone who was in the COVID ward. So this is a young man. He's 35 years old. I would imagine he was at absolutely zero risk, essentially zero risk. I saw a picture of him, not overweight guy. Sad thing is, the picture of him was him DJing at some event in front of a large crowd, and boy, did he look like he was having the time of his life. I wanted to be a rock star. I never thought about being a DJ. It was the same vibe, though. You go in front of a crowd, they chant your name, they wait for you to mix it up. He looked like he was having a great time, certainly looked like a young, healthy man. And they took every bit of that away from him. And when the first shot injured him horrifically, their answer to that was, well, you better take the second one, and now it's gotten even worse. This is your healthcare system. It's not, obviously, not just Australia. These things have happened in the United States. We've done countless stories on it. And this is with a shot that doesn't even work. The poor guy got COVID. A bad, bad, bad case of COVID on top of his initial paralysis. And yet we have still got pediatricians out there, signs up in their waiting rooms to make sure your child gets this shot. You see that sign, you better run. Be right back. All right, final segment for the day. Boy, I got to tell you, that letter is heartbreaking. Absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, I mean, I spend this show almost every day. I almost thought about it the other day. Should I just change the title of this show to Screwjob! Exclamation point. Because the difference between me and most conservative talk radio is I'm trying to point out we're all getting screwed by the same people. I don't know if this guy was a liberal guy or a conservative guy. He's an artist. Very likely he was liberal. Maybe that's why he was more prone to listen. But look, I think it's 95% of the adult Australians were talked into taking these shots. There's a lot of conservative people down in Australia. And so my idea is that left, right, black, white, young, old, are all being abused by the system. I don't know how this ends, but my point is we've got to do something pretty dramatically different. This is my problem with the Dennis Prager attack on the Libertarian Party. Essentially, his message was, because at no point during his time where he basically just painted the Libertarian Party as always a spoiler that benefits the left. I read statistics showing you that the Libertarian Party in 2016 took votes away from Hillary Clinton. May have actually been responsible for swinging some races towards Trump. So his premise is flawed. But at no time in that did he say, we need to vote for Republicans now, then we need to hold their feet to the fire and stop the spending, abolish these agencies, get rid of the Department of Education. Not at one point during that. Basically, he said, you got to stick with status quo. And that's really what it comes down to, because nobody's going to hold a Republican majority accountable for anything. The Tea Party was the greatest movement I've ever seen on the right, and they got really basically nothing. Patriot Act still in force. IRS is out there doing its thing. You're taxed through inflation more than ever. Inflation is a tax. You're paying inflation because the government spends too much money. You can pretend it's all Joe Biden's fault if that gets you through the night and makes you feel like you're fighting inflation by a red wave or voting for a Republican in 2024. But it's not going to do any good. I mean, it may make you feel warm and fuzzy, and at a cocktail party it may make for some good jokes, but your children's financial future is going to be destroyed. We've got to do something radically different. Radically different. Now, I think the only hope of that is if we have a severe crisis in this country, maybe a currency crisis, maybe where Americans become like Dutch farmers, where we finally have just had absolutely enough. I don't know, though, if the Dutch farmers were really very successful in their protests. I do like the manure cannons, though. I got to tell you, that's one of my favorite of all the protesting things, where they take these combines with the chutes, and they spray these buildings with manure, crap. I got to tell you, I love that. If you're going to do something that's ineffective, like voting for a particular party, I don't care which side you're on, then even if the Dutch farmers didn't win, at least they got to spray a little crap all over government buildings. And so Dennis Prager and the Republican Party's message is, trust us, we'll get it right this time for sure. Now the Republican Party's got their commitment with America. Does it call for abolishing the CDC? I have not heard a peep about that. The FDA, the SEC, the FBI, the CIA, the Department of Education. No, these things will all maintain themselves. We'll spend our children's inheritance on these agencies. Doesn't matter who's running the show. And so something just very, very different needs to happen. And the only way it's going to happen is if the right or left will quit hating each other just because of the way you vote. You might still disagree. I got a lot of friends I disagree with stuff on. I got a whole radio station here, and I disagree violently on certain issues with other hosts at the radio station. I still love them. They might talk about me behind my back. I'm okay with that. But it doesn't mean I'm not going to be friends with them, and I wouldn't be there if they needed me in a pinch at any time. And if we would, as people, realize we're all being played with these shots, played with this financial system, played with the death of the middle class in this country, and we finally realized that and came together, we might actually do something different. And it might involve a national divorce, and I'm down with that too. Let's get the feds out of our lives and then retreat to our separate corners. I think that's probably the best solution out there. That's all the time I've got. I'll see you tomorrow.
No Bye-bye. Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how